All right, so I guess says three is the recording on. Welcome everybody. This is the February 20th, 2026 meeting of the Historic Preservation Review Board. I'd like to start out by asking for an approval of the meeting agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Graham. Trish, did you beat Adrienne to the punch on that? Did you give a
I
second?
might have, but she can have it.
Oh, thank you. Thank
No?
you. I'll
Okay,
take
so
it.
Adrienne seconded. All right. we have to now have a selection of the chairperson and vice chairperson. I'm currently serving as vice chair.
Interim or no way call it.
Well, and then therefore, I'm serving as chair.
Bill, when does your term end? Is
We had
it?
a long conversation. It's either this summer or next, depending on whether my appointments were two. We think it was 2 4-year terms, which would mean next June.
Next June sounds better to me. So, can I nominate you for chair?
If it's only for 1 year, I would accept that
I'll
myself.
second that. Yeah, if we need a second.
But what happens, Mary, if we find out is I should be off this right away?
It won't
Yeah.
be. We'll just, yeah, Mary, just ignore it. Just ignore it.
Yeah.
You can
And
tell
Don, do you have a memory of this, a folk memory of this?
Sorry.
I know I started in the summer of 2019. So if I had 2 4-year terms, I have one more year.
Yeah. That sounds perfectly accurate. To my knowledge,
Well, some people got appointed shorter terms, that
3 year terms or
three-year
something.
terms.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah. So, all right. So at this point, do we take a vote, even though we have no quorum? We have a quorum? Okay, good. Okay.
Do we have to do the vice chair at the same time, or do we do them one at a time?
Probably one at a time.
Okay.
I'll move that Bill Chapman be appointed as chair of the Historic Preservation Board.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you for your vote of confidence. Thanks. I do feel the weight already. I'm slipping down at my seat because I carry this
Great
extra
honor, great
responsibility.
responsibility, as they
Heavy
say on
is the head
Spectrum.
that wears the crown, right? So now we need a vice chair. I'll open the floor for nominations.
Since I'm safe at home, Graham, you've been on the second longest. Can we nominate you vice chair?
Guess so.
Like.
Sure.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, okay. You're next. Yeah, I know.
I know.
And then,
I'll be ready when it's my time.
okay.
Well, the vice chair, I'll let you know, is the chair in, the chair in training.
Oh, it's chair-elect. Okay.
So, do we have a second for that nomination? Adrian, second. And so we just call a vote. All those in favor of Grant Hart serving as vice chair?
Hi.
Can I vote myself? We can't.
Okay.
If I don't vote for myself, we don't have quorum, so I
Well,
have to vote for
this
myself.
morning when I had a question, I called Brent Graham immediately, so I think that may suggest that that may be just a question about the meeting time and stuff. That was that.
It's important for the chair to know when the meeting is.
Yeah. I keep a
But
calendar.
just reconfirming because I had it on my calendar as a Zoom meeting, and I thought, why is that a Zoom meeting? All right, so now we're going to be looking at the past minutes. Could we, has everybody had a chance to look at the November 21st meeting minutes? If not, I could give us all a few minutes to. I want to compliment Bree and Mary for being so good about getting this out to us, doing such a good job of supporting the board, so thank you both.
I thought the minutes looked good. I didn't have questions.
Okay.
Are we ready to?
Well, I think we need to approve separately the approval of the minutes for the meeting of November 21. So.
I will move to approve the
meeting. Okay. Adrian moves.
I'll second.
Then Graham seconds. All in favor? Okay. And now approval of the limited meeting the day before. The minutes. So there. Graham is accept those minutes.
I'll second.
Adrian seconding it. And so I think we are all in favor. Okay. I think we're good. So the nominations and the approved agenda for today. Is there any reason to change the order? We always can do that in a friendly fashion. If anybody's here already that wants to go first. All right. So we'll begin with the Aaron Cheney residence at 44A Mama La Ola Place, right?
Thank you. Hi, my name is Axel Schmitzberger. I'm a professor at Cal Poly Pomona and architecture. Thank you for hearing me today. And my presentation on the nomination of the Aaron M. Cheney residence on 44 Mamalohoa Place, 8 Mamalohoa Place, that's up in Nuuanu, up in Nuuanu next to the Pali Highway. Next slide, please. I'm beginning with criterion C, the residence itself, and I'm proposing two nominations under criteria D and C, and I'm starting with C. Here's a cadastral map which shows the in pink the residence called out. It's the old Pali Road is the lower roadside here. There is Mamalohoa Place is a cul-de-sac that's off of Mamalohoa Place. And the residence itself, it's actually the other one, is Mamalohoa Place. Yeah, there we go. And the residence itself is accessible through a small shared driveway that you see in the sliver between the two last residences up there. This driveway is not part of the nomination. It's a different, separate TMK, and it's shared with another residence. That's the neighboring residence of the said property. Next slide, please. Here I'm presenting you two photos taken from the end of this driveway. The current state is on the left. On the right-hand side, you see a photo from, I believe, from 1980s, which was from the assessor documents taken in the 1980s. You can see that there is some minute changes in the residence, particularly the color, which appears to have been a dark green originally, which would suit Arthur Price, who is the architect of the residence. The residence was built in 1950, designed in 1950. The official completion was listed as January 1951. But I do know from the news articles that the residence was occupied since October 1950. And the residence itself, which is really exciting for me personally, since I'm a big Arthur Price architect fan, this is one of his few butterfly roof residences that he's done. You see also some other slight changes where the original guardrail, which is to the access of the kitchen here, used to be a tongue and groove board form guardrail, and is now, I think, more or less an off-the-shelf Home Depot style guardrail. There's also some changes in the windows, which used to be those awning windows, and now it's a sliding door actually to the deck that is adjacent to it. But other than that, there's a few other slight changes. But next slide, please. Here we see again juxtaposed an old photo from the 1950s. I believe it's 1951 by Robert Wenkamp, the famous Hawaiian photographer, and a current photo of the residence. We can see very expressive the butterfly roof here that is still extant. Indeed, we can see that pretty much the appearance from the outside is fairly original, There's some minute changes. You can see that the left-hand side large class plate was originally boarded. That had to do with the interior development. There was a wet bar behind it that doesn't exist anymore and is now a full large glass plate. Also, the kitchen windows, which you see in the white squared off areas, is slightly larger. It used to be awning windows. It's now sliding windows. And the trellis had some minor changes, which I'm going to point out in the next slide, please. Thank you. Actually, not in this slide, but we do have the fortune to have all the drawings, the full drawing set of the residence, which would allow a complete restoration should this be desired by current or future owners. Next slide, please. That includes, obviously, also all the interior details, like all the millwork details, for which Price is very well known to have done in every residence. Here we can see, again, photos of the original photos versus current photos. Next slide, please. We are facing now the entrance to the residence, which is this trellis that originally was supported by V-shaped 3-inch steel columns that are now replaced by 4x4 posts. The extending fascia, which extended 3 feet past its line, has also been shortened, and the trellis received a corrugated roof. But again, this is very minor intervention here. This is very easy to restore to its original state, if should be said. And technically, it's still the existing framing of the roof. So this is, for me, I think, a very clear statement that this is a fairly original residence. The interesting access with the house is that you go up a few steps and then a ramp up to the building, which I find very curious, but also very beautiful. And this trellis is the continuation of one of the roof lines, which is one of those exciting details on the interior and also shapes the interior lanai particularly. Next slide, please. Here we see a photo from inside to the outside from the lanai, and on the opposite side, the current state, inside, outside. You can see there's some minute changes also in the lanai. It got screened off now with insect screens and the lower vertical spruced kind of like, let's call it guardrail or fencing. Again, this is a minor intervention that's easily removable should it be desired to restore it to its original shape. But the existing guardrail is all still extant. Next slide, please. Here we see the lanai itself and this expressive roof form shape as we have it. And we can see at the end where the original bar used to be. It's now a large glass plate window. And on the right side, you see the current kitchen, which follows the same layout as the original kitchen, and even the configuration is almost identical. It's just a replaced kitchen that was updated in the 1980s, I believe, if not 90s. Next slide, please. This is a juxtaposition of the original photograph from the 1950s versus the current state. We can see that originally there was an Alfred Price design dining table inside and a millwork. And the kitchen received now in the current state a pass-through area. So the wall has been opened up. But again, this is also, I think, in given the configuration of the and the framing of the building, it's a minor intervention. Next slide, please. And here I can demonstrate that we even have for the actual table the plans still and all the millwork drawings. These are actually original hand drawings by Alfred Price that we found in the residence. Next, this is the original kitchen layout. You can see that the configuration is more or less identical. What's gone is obviously the millwork, the scalloping slope drawers that are so typical for prices and for the time, particularly the towel pull-out and stuff like this is all not there anymore. And obviously the stove and the uppers are gone since there's now a pass-through in this area. Thank you. Next slide. This is the current living room. And on the right-hand side, we see the living room facing towards the back with its family room, which used to be a bedroom also. The bedroom in the, is particularly interesting because it has usually the pocket sliders, which is so typical for Bright, so you can create a flex zone between this the study or bedroom with the living room, so it's a quasi extension. The living room received a relatively new fireplace here, and the sliders are also new, but the general residents received an addition in 1960 by the architect himself, which was an extra bedroom addition. So it is unclear actually what exactly changed in 1960 and what has happened later on. There might have been some on-the-spot changes, which is also very typical for the time, that may have motivated some of these current changes. Thank you. Next. This is the master bedroom. We can see that the hopper windows on top of the large glass plate have been replaced, but other than that, even the horizontal rail that continues from the windows and the board form is all still extant. There has been a mini split unit placed up in the corner. The cabinetry, the closets received mirror glazing, but again, this is relatively minor interventions here, all very easy to restore. And actually, the general gesture of the building is still extant. Thank you. Next slide. Here we see the two bathrooms. One is the new bathroom and one is the old bathroom, because a new bathroom was added in 1960. It was prepared already for an addition in the original drawings, but the 1960 bathroom has been added. And so there's the drawers have the original millwork of Price still. Doubt that the tiling and finishes are original, and some of the millwork has obviously replaced, which likely has to do with the age and with the areas. It's very typical that those things start decaying very quickly and first of all places in the building. Thank you. Next. This is an exterior shot facing southeast, where we can see again on the right-hand side an original photograph by Robert Wenken and the current state, which is photographed by myself in this case. The landscaping, which I want to also point out, we don't have any information about the original landscaping, as usual, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I know, I figured you would ask. But it's also important to me because there's some famous landscape architects here on the island, which I would like to point out if I find them. And in this case, it was a fairly barren grass landscape in the original design. The current owner has taken quite some effort to make a very beautiful garden landscape, a current landscape, but I have no documentation of any original landscape design whatsoever. It seems like there was a palm tree in the corner originally that is long gone. There's a minor creek easement on the very corner of the property. This is actually where I'm standing with the photograph right now. It drops down a bit here, but you can't really access it. It's all shrub. It's all shrub there. Next slide, please. Quickly to the resident itself, it was well published during its time, especially in the 1950s. There was a special edition article about it in Paradise of the Pacific, 1951, and it has been documented partially due to the fame of the owner, which is Aaron Cheney, and I'm getting to this in a second, and also partially because it was an exceptional residence by Alpha Price at the time. I feature it also in my book, Alpha Price Displaced. Next slide, please. Quickly to Aaron and Cheney, who is a Hawaiian native, or was a Hawaiian native. He was born in 1923 and died in 2003. And I'm jumping here to criterion B now. Next slide, please. I collected here one page of quick newspaper articles. Aaron M. Cheney was well featured in news media during his lifetime. He was born in Honolulu, went to Punahou, class of 1940, joined the military in World War II, and then worked for Lewis and Cook, and then Cook Trust later, where he became vice president of property management. And 1960, he formed his own property management company and real estate company in 1960 with his wife, Betty, which became, that's the beauty of it, which became the largest broker and property management company in Hawaii and one of the largest in the United States, actually. Aaron Cheney served on numerous boards. It's too many of them to list right now. As chairman or as president, he's the recipient of the very famous OO award for real estate brokers. There is a golf tournament named in his name, the Cheney Golf Tournament. I'm not sure if it still is going as such. I'm not a golfer, unfortunately. Not in Hawaii, but in 2006 they still held the tournament. So that's the last time I found a mention of it. He died on the island as well. He joined company with Brooke in 1981, and this is then Cheney and Brooke brokers. That again was one of the largest property management and real estate companies in the United States. He retired in 1995 and died in 2003. Next slide, please. And quickly to the architect of the residence. I'm gonna jump through this quickly. I think some of you have heard the slides before or seen the slides before. This is Criterion B as well. It's Alfred Price, born 1911, died in 1994. Next slide, please. He was employed by Darling Conrad after he fled Nazi persecution from Vienna in Austria, my home country. Built for Darling Conrad several interesting buildings, including the Jade building in downtown and the Lewis apartments that are still extant. Next slide, please. He also is responsible for the Lapa'ahoehoe Elementary School amongst with his colleagues, associated architects of Vladimir Osipov, Philip Fisk, and Johnson and Perkins, as well as the Mauna Loa shopping mall, which was historically registered but been torn down, I think, in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. Next slide, please. He's also responsible for the first Methodist Church, the Honolulu Sioux entrance, and of course the USS Arizona Memorial, which is his best known architecture example. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. As a public servant, which is his second career, he was very active in the AIA, the Hawaii Honolulu chapter, but also as state planning coordinator, was responsible for the memorial systems plan that led them to the USS Arizona Memorial design. Next slide, please. And he was clearly well received, or not always well received in news, but he was very present in the news as the founder of the Hawaiian State Foundation for the Culture and the Arts that he stewarded and presided over until 1980, where he retired due to ill health. But he still founded the Hawaiian Arts Alliance at this time. And during his tenure as the president of the HSFCA, he also created the 1% law, which stipulated that 1% of public funded buildings should be used for art and maintenance and purchase of art. Next, thank you. And he was well decorated by numerous institutions. Next slide, please. Well presented and honored by the governor of Hawaii. Next slide, please. Here we see the Price family actually at their home. In the very back corner, you see Alfred Price, his daughter Erica Price, and his son Jan Peter Price in the front here with wife Dudley. We see him getting an honorary doctorate and his last public performance during the 50-year anniversary celebration of the USS Arizona Memorial. Next slide, in 1991. And here we should hear him talking about the 1% law. I'm going to skip this. We can see also his hand scribbled notes on the actual bill. Next slide, please. That concludes. There's actually an USS Arizona and Alfred Price Memorial Day. This is May 31st. That was instated by the governor of Hawaii, Abercrombie, in 2012. Thank you very much. With that, I'm concluding my presentation.
I've been a little remiss in not introducing everybody or having people introduce themselves, which we kind of missed. So I think for the record, maybe we should do that and get everyone in the audience as well. Sorry. Graham, do you want to?
Graham Hart, architect.
And I'm Bill Chapman. I'm series of architectural historian, now the chair.
Adrian Truluck, historical landscape architect.
Trisha Cahill Lenny Watson, historian, I think in the culture seat too. Former student of Bill's.
I'm Brianna Schmidt, architectural historian.
I am Mary Kadama, architecture branch chief at Chief
Team. I'm Tiare Sansan, office assistant at Chief
Team. Andrea?
Andrea Nagyostar, historical white foundation.
Thanks for coming, Andrea.
Kathy McGraw, trustee for 44A Mamalahoa.
Okay, that thought maybe, yeah.
give her present nominations.
Well, thank you all. So now we're going to ask. Thank you, Axel, for the nice presentation. And any questions from people? Usually this is a question period. We have time to discussion after we have a motion.
I have no questions.
I was going to ask about the landscape, but you answered that. I'm not sure if what I have is more of a question. I think it's more of a discussion topic. So
I have some stuff for discussion too. Trish, any questions?
Oh, I'm good. That was a lovely presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. Cool. Okay, so I'm going to ask to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that the Cheney residence be added to the state historic places register. Is that what we're saying? What's our words again? I'm co-chair and I'm vice chair.
Hawaii
Register of Historic Places. Are we nominating it for
National as well? We'll do it for purposes of discussion. Do what they have requested.
Okay.
So under criteria.
Under criteria C and B.
Do I have a second?
Coffee.
Remember, this is all for purpose of discussion. You're not voting it in yet. So.
I'll second.
Okay, thanks, Trish. Okay, so I'd like to open it for discussion. I have thoughts, but maybe it should let the rest of the board discuss first.
Okay, yeah, I can start. Okay.
Thanks.
So I think there's something we've talked about before with some of the other price buildings is that criterion B.
That's right.
That because he's the master designer and that's his association with it, that really is criterion C.
I understand.
Yeah. And then I won't belabor that. We've discussed it before and kind of come to that agreement before as well on some previous meetings. It's a B can be a little tricky to nail down, but the bar is quite high for B.
Okay.
So even for Cheney, for the person whose home it is, unless there's a compelling association that shows a very strong influence on that person's life, not just that they lived there or even that they had it built, B doesn't typically apply.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was not sure what the threshold is for B nomination either, but do we... okay, fair.
I think one guide on that is, I mean, had it been Bryce's own house, you probably made a case for his importance beyond just being an architect. That would make sense. But he designed this house. He didn't live in this.
So I'm just trying to, I think the threshold is not yet met, in your opinion, with Cheney's presence in general.
I would agree with
that
too.
Yeah. Typically it's the house itself or the property being nominated would have to have a stronger association with an influence on why that person was prominent, or their influence on that building would have to be evident.
That would need to have more cultural significance, I would assume.
Either like a more cultural significance or more of a clear association with their importance rather than, you know, because that's typically the threshold. And it's not super clear sometimes in the National Register about
that,
but that's over time you start to see that. I think I'm
asking Bush.
Exactly. No, and that's totally legit. And like we, it's a pretty common thing to see. It's like, well, does B apply? And there's always a discussion about that. And
I think the smallest number of nominations nationally that are under criterion B because of that. And they have raised the higher, they have to be someone who had a really documented impact on probably more than his particular industry.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a very strong C though.
I would suggest so too. And can I rescind or do you decline the B criterion, or do I rescind it, or do I re-nominate it?
Well, I think what we have to do is vote on Mary.
You would vote on the criteria, and then if it's voted on or approved, then we can work together to adjust the nomination.
Don't we have to make a? Don't we have to do the motion that's on the table?
Yes.
We don't have to redo the motion, but I think in the past we have treated it as an administrative change.
Okay.
Well, I think we can also just amend the motion to only put C, right? We don't need to...
Yeah, it doesn't require additional information or anything. It's just, it's just a check.
Fair enough. I would.
So do you consider it something akin to a friendly... A friendly addition or a friendly
subtraction?
I'd say administrative would be like kind of.
Well, it would be a friendly amendment, right? I mean, so I think Ron would just redo his motion to just nominate under C instead of C and B.
Okay. I'd like to friendly amend my motion to just be criterion C.
I will second friendly. Yeah.
Any further discussion now that we have
Just to clarify, in the past, if there was a change in the criteria, we would work with the nominator to just adjust the nomination so that it's clear that it's only under that criteria, not only in the checkbox, but in the narrative. Yep. So that's what we do afterwards.
All right, and the staff assumes that responsibility.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to go back to you unless they were making a substantive change to the nomination to include a new criteria. Like
subtraction's easier than addition.
Yeah, subtraction's easier than addition.
Thank you, Jessica.
Especially if it's not substantive and adding new information that you guys haven't considered.
Cool.
We did introduction just before you came in. Would you like to add to that?
Oh, yeah, I'm the administrator of the State Service and Deputy SHPO.
What's your name, Jessica?
Oh, Jessica Pop.
Thanks for being here. So I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of listing the property at...
Do you have a question? Wait, hold on.
Is there additional discussion?
Yes, you can if you like.
Mary, when you make those administrative changes, is the final corrected nomination the one that lands on the page for shifting so that if we repost it, we're reposting an accurate nomination?
Oh, is my question. You know, I think that we have been leaving the most recent version before it meets the board, but we can certainly update it with the most final version from now on. That's good.
Very helpful.
Yeah,
thanks for clarifying, Andrea. I know it is very helpful for us.
Or in the case of like HHF or any member of the public, if they want a final version, this version, I don't know if it's going to National Park Service or not, but whatever the final version is, any member of the public may request a copy of that from our office. And we can provide with a copy. So just for anybody who's experienced these meetings in the past with edits, our website does not reflect the last edited version of any nomination. To make sure that you're getting the final version of any nomination, you should be contacting our staff and we can get it for you. So doing this, what Mary is saying that she'll do, is not the norm. So
I don't think we should change our record of the meeting to be the updated one, right? So it should, if they want to resubmit and then they just provide it to us for information, because what we reviewed today, like the record should reflect what came to us.
We shouldn't be, I'll talk to Mary about not removing the draft that came to you all and perhaps just adding a final draft to our website, our notice page, so that the public can know the difference. But just as a matter of course, that website is just the documents for review board meetings. It isn't reflective of the last and final draft. There's edits.
That's I guess.
Anyway, I think I'm personally grateful that you are willing to take on small changes like this, because I think for purposes of our interaction with the community and the public, to send people back when they have to make one change, and then it's really puts a lot of burden on them and reflects badly on us. So I think thank you for doing this. I think it's important that we do that. It was what we did in the old time. We did, really. We often did changes post-meeting. So anyway, now I can call the question, okay? So all in favor of listing 44A Mama Lahoa Place on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criterion C? Okay.
Did we also, you said also forwarded for consideration for the National Register in your original?
Yeah, I did.
And your consideration for the National Register of Historic Places. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your concerns and
everything. See you guys.
See you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Morning, Don.
If anyone would like to come see the house, contact Axel. He is my contact.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We missed our opportunity.
I know. I'm sad about the meeting yesterday.
Similar to the one we went to on Wilhelmina, right?
A little bit. Rotated, but yeah.
My name is Tom Hibbert, and I'll be presenting the next two nominations. First one will be the Walter E. and Muriel Flanders Residence, which is one of our 36 Old Poly Place. It was built originally in 1935, and then 1940 it had an addition. And 1935 architect was a man by the name of Milton Hoyce, or I should say a designer, he wasn't an architect. And then the addition in 1940 was by Vladimir Osipov. The Flanders residence is significant at the local level, the criterion C. A good example of a 1930s Hawaii regional style house in Honolulu. The house includes a number of distinctive features and is typical of this period. It's design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. I just thought, just for a little background, it's in the nomination too. The Flanders, Mrs. Flanders was the daughter of F. Walter McFarlane, and her mother was Alice Kamakila Campbell. Mr. Flanders was born in Michigan, and the two met when they were going to college. She was going to UC Berkeley, and he was going to Menlo Junior College. They got married in 1933. At that point, Mrs. Flanders' mother and father were divorced. They had the wedding at the penthouse in the Fairfax Hotel. Fairmont Hotel, and there Mrs. Flanders had the penthouse, or Mrs. Campbell. At the wedding, the father suggested, if you guys like, I'm going to build a house in Nu'uanu, and you can come live with me if you come back to Hawaii. And so they decided to do that. Mr. Flanders hired an architect and had the house built. The house was built just down the street. Another house is on the register, which was Lucy Henriquez's house. Lucy Henriquez was one of the maids of honor in Queen Emma's court, and so her estate was being subdivided. And Mr. McFarlane bought a piece of that and built the house on that piece. After a couple moved back, and Mr. Flanders said, well, I think I'd like to go stay in my house. So he went up to the house to stay overnight, and had a bad case of asthma and said, oh, this is terrible, I can't live here. And so at Christmas time, he gave the couple a house. So that's how they got the house. When they first moved into the house, the Flanders had one daughter, Alice Guild. And after that, he had two more daughters, Mary Philpotts, and then Judy Scott. So I think when Judy was born, that precipitated the need for the addition because it wasn't enough bedroom. Sorry, excuse me. little background on the house. For the house itself, the house is parcel of land goes here, up across the back, and down the side. This is the house.
Top button, you can silent it, you know that.
Huh? Oh, that's true. I do.
Pop button on the left of silent.
Well, I didn't find this. Okay, but it's silent now. The house itself is this house here. There's a new house here, a new house here, and sort of newer house here. This house, the current owner's son lives in this house, her son lives in this house, and her sister lives in this house. But you'll see from the slides, they don't really intrude on the house at all. This is actually another feature on the site. New Wanawawa forms the boundary on this side. So this is actually a two-story house, but only the one story is at the same level as the house from Romney. The original house was this part and to about here. Yeah, it's in here. And then Ossipoff added this part in the back. And also put a galley or a hallway here. Okay.
But the rear house is attached.
It's not really attached. It might be a board attaching it, but
the roof overlaps.
We'll have to look when we go. I don't know, this might be the laundry. For this house.
Okay.
Next picture. Here you can see the picture of the house. Here you can see the addition over here, or the one son's house. This is the other son's house. And I'm quite sure this is the laundry in the back, which is part of the nomination. Only other major change too is this little carport is here. And I think Ossipoff may have put the garage on that. Looks like it was added. Oh, one back. No? Missing one? Go again.
Yes?
Oh, there. No, one more back. How come?
Then we got the main facade picture.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what I thought was coming up next. No, one. Huh.
What? That was the main facade, right?
This is the main facade.
That's the main facade.
I have a better picture of it.
Oh. You're right, that is the main facade. That is the carport.
Yeah. Probably in the nomination.
Looks like
form.
A rear facade.
Typical Hawaii, just a carport in the living room. Love that.
Indoor, outdoor.
Yeah, it's the best room in the house.
So there is the. Is this the one from the nomination?
Yeah, that's the one in the nomination.
You've seen it in the form.
It was in my slideshow. I think that's all this one.
I think we can see it, Don, even though it may not be the most complimentary in the nomination you have it.
Yeah. Just curious what I screwed up.
It's the form, which is where it matters the most.
Yes, that is true. Okay. Well, I guess we can go for it.
Yeah, this slide shows the exact same.
Not there either? Yeah. I must have deleted it somehow. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
No.
Anyway, we'll hold it against you.
Yeah, I lost my slide.
Yeah, really? So easy now. Sorry, Brianna.
That's okay. Thanks.
Yeah, but anyway, the house, typical Hawaii-style house of the period, double-pitch hip roof, board and batten walls, has lava rock column in the corner right there. You can see by where the garage and the house is, and also lava rock being used on the plan or boxes down below. Here you can get, you can see the carport that was added, but it's very transparent. And like I say, I think the garage was probably added by Osipov, but I don't know for sure. But it just seems like it was additive. Up next, here you can see the garage, board and batten walls, truss ceiling, concrete floor. The main house, the steps, the porch has been retiled, but that's the only change. It has the original casement windows, the original door. Next, there you can see the original door is scored and has the original handle. And inside the door, and you can see there's still a few of the original light switches that are left in the house with their brass plates. Next, living room runs across the front. You have the two casements there, and then you have sliding windows in the back. Sconces on the wall next. And looking the other way, originally the room behind the door was the master bedroom. And then after they put the addition on, the master bedroom moved that and they made that into a music room. Next. Here you can see that room. Has a rather interesting light. And I'll show you. There's another one just like it in the dining room. I'll show you in a minute. And next. And here you can see, again, the original casement windows. Has Kanek walls, Kanek ceilings, all of which remain in place as well. And here you're looking back from the one room into the living room. And then the next slide is going in the back wall of the living room, opens up and goes into the dining room. And here you can see the hallway running all the way back. Next. This is the dining room, which essentially is a large lanai, enclosed lanai. It has sliding windows on two sides. Again, here's that lamp, which I like. I imagine that the architect was he was an interesting person. He was a graphic designer, essentially, a commercial designer. He came from Los Angeles in the 1920s and worked with Randolph Crossley at first as Britain Advertising. And then he opened his own firm. And his partner was Mrs. Flanders' brother. So I'm sure that's how he got the job to design the house originally. Here you can see that light. Also, you can see the windows still have the original locks and hardware, which is true throughout the house. Here you can see the lanai from the outside. And looking back towards the east, there's a bar at the end of the lanai, or the dining room lanai, and also the two doors go into the kitchen. Here's a close-up of that bar. You can see it still has its original metalwork, woodwork. Matter of fact, it's all intact. Next, has a skylight ceiling to illuminate. It still has all the original shelves.
An actual skylight, or is that just is that an actual skylight, or just a light fixture?
I think it's a skylight. No, it must be a light fixture. Yeah, because I don't see it on the outside of the house.
The roof view, there is no.
Yeah.
Still is.
It's fine.
Then here, the door going in. This door is a hinge door. The other one is a swinging door. The kitchen's been remodeled. Next, has new cabinets, jalousy windows. Also a new door there. If you go out that door, there's a little back porch next. And I thought it was rather interesting. You have your trash receptacles there. So you put your trash can in, so you can open the top to put your trash in. And then you have doors to open to take the trash cans out. And so I thought it was rather a nice little feature, different that I've never seen before. Also different in the house, in the corner, this is a bird cage, which actually the bird has two screened walls that are outside.
Is that original? Or is that an original feature?
Yeah. Yeah, they had birds.
Catio.
And then going out of the kitchen, this is the other hallway going out. There's a pantry on the right, which has a little open grill work for a ventilator. Original slate in this Kanex ceiling. Next. And then also sliding doors for the pantry, and they still have their original hardware as well. The house is incredibly intact. In the back wall of the dining room, there's a pocket door, which also has a pocket screen, which opens up onto the hallway galley. Also, you'll notice the stained concrete floors in the lanai. Here's the galley. The galley was added by Osipov. Originally, there was two bedrooms. You can see the two door openings, and you see they're one step above the hallway galley. And so that's was part of the courtyard. So he enclosed the hallway with large sliding screen windows and typical of the period, horizontal panes. Also, underneath, there's a shelf underneath. I was surprised. It doesn't open up. Because I thought there would be more storage, but there's not. Next. And yeah, here you can see the sliding windows. And this is from 1940. It has a different locking mechanism than the ones in the dining room. And next. And here is the sliding doors that go out to the lanai. I'm sorry, maybe we should go back around 10 slides. I had the picture of the lanai, if you can see from the outside, too, or the patio. Sorry. After we got messed up without the original front slide.
Change the second slide.
Yeah, it should have been.
Aerial. Sorry.
Yeah, aerial, then the...
We remember.
Oh, you do? Next one.
Yes.
This one. Yeah. So there you can see the hallway from the exterior, and then the addition in the back that Osipov put on as well. And as you see, they're not maintaining it. Okay, now we can go back again. Sorry for the interruption. Yes. And then here you can see the bedrooms. The bedrooms have openings which have bifolds, louvered bifolds to close them. And like, there's three bedrooms actually in the bedroom wing. The first two were here. The one was supposed to be for the father, the other one was for the daughter. And then there's a third bedroom added, but the doorway for that is off the addition, but the louvers are on the galley side. Next.
You think those louvers are original?
I don't know. No, don't know at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, too bad we couldn't see it. I would have liked your opinion on that. Yeah. But I'm trying to think what it would be if it wasn't.
Yeah.
And,
really something, but quiet.
Yeah. And here you can see one bedroom has the original fir floors, casement windows. They're a mess. Between the two bedrooms is a Jack and Jill bathroom. The bathroom is very much intact as well. Tile floors, tile wainscot, the single panel door. Here you can see a shower with a sunken tub in it, with a nice archway over it. Still has the original sink, original towel racks, also the original medicine cabinet with the light above, and even the original toilet, although the seat's been changed. Even the toilet paper holder is still original. The window's been changed out to a jalousy, but it's one of the few, and I don't think it affects the character of the house that much. It's also not visible from the road. Next. Here is Osipov at the end of the hallway. Osipov added this large enclosed lanai, which is a family room, essentially. Kanek ceiling, Kanek walls still intact. Next. The sliding windows in the back are all original. However, the sliding windows that were facing out on the patio have all been changed. They're vinyl. But again, compared to the intactness of the house, I don't think it detracts from the historic character of the house. Here you can see the original windows there. Interesting door, which, again, this is another question, is it original or not? And it's takeoff that you see in the 50s of the sliding screen that can be put up, in this case a window, it will block the screen. And I don't know if Osipov did this or if this is later, but the hardware looks old. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, but if it would, this would be Osipov anticipating the style of the kitchen doors in the 50s. And then when you go in up the step, there's a hallway, and to the left is a master bedroom, which goes this way, has a little hallway of its own. To the right will be a bathroom for and dressing room for the master bedroom. Next, the master bedroom has its original windows, Kanek wall, Kanek ceiling also. It's a mess. Through that doorway, you go into a dressing room. The dressing room has built-in vanity with pulls. On the opposite side of the vanity, you can see it in the mirror, the cabinets and drawers, and there's a large walk-in closet as well. And then through the door, you can see in the right-hand photo, it goes into the bathroom proper. The bathroom still has its plastic grill work over the sink. Also, I found it interesting, in the shower, he put a screen to ventilate, and also over the door to the bathroom, there's a metal transom. They're all still intact. This is the laundry room in the back. If you go to the right instead of the left, opposite end from the master bedroom, the door on your left with four panes, that'll take you out to this laundry room. In the back, the door in the back is a closet, single panel. You can see the door going out has its original handle and everything. And then the laundry room has a wall of jalousy windows. And you can see in the back behind the washer and dryer, there's a little 2x4 frame, essentially. It encloses it. So it's a fairly open space, but it's under a flat roof. So that flat roof was this. And then you can see the house beyond, just behind. But it's separated. Okay. This lava rock wall on the right is the wall that holds up the patio, the retaining wall for that. And there's a walkway, a grass walkway that goes down to a lower part of the property. And then the lower part of the property, next slide, has the new one OLY running, which is the boundary line for it, the middle of the OLY. So the house is very, very much intact. I think it's a really good example of late 30s Hawaii regional style. The house was written up in 1949 in the Honolulu Advertiser as the home of the week. And they complimented its easy, graceful Hawaiian way of living. And commented saying it fits the environment and yet at the same time meets the needs of modern living. So again, we're nominating it at the local level under Criterion C for the Hawaii Register and recommending it for the national.
Open it up for questions.
Did you... Was there any drawings over at?
No.
Checked them, yeah.
No, the only reason I knew what was added and what was not was there was an oral history done by the Outrigger Canoe Club of Mrs. Flanders, and she discussed here was the original, then Osipov added.
Any other questions? It has a double pitch roof, but bell cast slightly. You said. It did, right?
Huh?
Has a slightly double pitch.
Oh, yeah, it's a double pitch. You can go, even the junk picture, or you can look at the one in the nomination. I think it shows fairly well there.
Slightly,
yeah, it's not like a dramatic, but you can see it.
Yeah, it's a double pitch.
So did Alice Gill grow up in this house? I knew Alice.
Yes, as did Mary Philpotts. And I was shocked. Oh, I'll go talk to him. And I found out the two of them died in the last 2 years.
Well, I said passed away. I didn't know that. Mary.
Yeah, Mary did too. So, and the other sister lives on the mainland and part-time in Big Island.
I guess I always pictured Alice being a Campbell, you know, estate person. I figured she had some big country house somewhere.
Well, it's a nice house.
No, but I mean, it's still relatively modest for someone who came into the Campbell estate.
Is the house still in the same family, or has the house been sold since then?
No, they sold when the Flanders. I forget what year that Mr. Flanders died, but they sold the house.
Curious, I mean, Milton Hoist, not an architect, right? Just a graphic designer.
Yeah.
But the house has all these like hallmarks of Hawaii regionalism, 1930s stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, was that, is this picking up what everyone else was doing? Was,
or yeah, maybe.
Was that just how you built that?
Maybe
then?
The client guided.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, okay, he's working for my son.
Yeah.
He does art. You can draw this up.
Yeah.
And And the only reason I knew that he did it is the 1949 Advertiser article mentioned the fact that he was the designer for the house.
Mentioned the nomination. That was like probably the only house.
Yeah, that's the only house. There's nothing in the newspapers. I'm looking. Did he do anything else? But there's no permit. In the newspapers attributed.
I could know this, but Don, and you probably know it better than any of us, what do you need to have as a license or anything in the territory in the 30s? What did you need to get approval on a drawing?
I'm not sure when they got, because the AIA started in the 20s, and I imagine at that point they're probably going to start pushing for it, but I'm not sure when licensing requirements came in.
Because a lot of our properties,
good question.
A lot of our properties are builder designed, right?
Yeah,
they seem to have been able to get permits. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need a structural engineer for residence.
But I don't know if they actually got somebody else to sign for them in those days.
No,
right?
There was a big controversy. Hartwood was very upset that Ray Morris was allowed into the AIA. Because of the fact that he was also building and not just designing.
But he had been trained as an architect, though. Because he worked for those for years.
Right. But Graham is right, though. You didn't need, even in the 50s, you didn't need an architect to sign off on plans. Were they tearing down those apartments to build that high-rise on Kapiolani? There was a big scandal in the newspaper because one of the city and county reviewers was an engineer, and he was signing off on building permits like 20 a month. And so it became a little scandal. And he signed off on like half of those apartments.
Back in the 50s or 60s when those were built?
Yeah.
This is sort of just aside, but when I worked in the territory of the Virgin Islands, they had rather casual rules for who signed off and stuff too. They kind of ran a business out of the public works office. So.
Yeah, interesting. When I did an oral history with Ed Solomon, he was saying in the 50s, two sheets of paper is all you had to go to for a building permit. And he said usually, and just gave that to the carpenters, they know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to know more about it. California, because you had so many people in the film industry, they're always talking about them spilling over and doing storybook houses and stuff.
Right.
And I don't know if that's anyone's actually ever shown that exactly true, but probably.
That's true.
No, it's something should be able to find that.
When the Flanders hired Ossipoff, you mentioned. Well, was there a Berkeley connection? I guess is the question, because they both lived. You mentioned that they both lived in Berkeley.
Oh,
Ossipoff and
Ossipoff would have been later, though. Oh no, it would have been pretty close.
Just 5 years later.
That's right. Yeah, that would have been close. Yeah, I don't know if that's the connection or what's the connection.
We'll hire him because he's a good guy. Yeah.
I knew him from school.
yeah, yeah.
That could be.
And Mr. Flanders met, she was a Flanders.
No, he was a Flanders.
He was the guy that met.
Yeah, but no, Miss Campbell went to Berkeley.
And then he went to junior college nearby and they met at some social engagement or something.
Yes, that's my assumption.
He struck it rich, right?
Yeah, and I didn't mention he operated a men's store in Honolulu for many years, and during the war he was doing flight training in Arizona, training pilots, and then after the war he opened his own aviation school here in Hawaii. But then later on he obviously became more involved in Campbell Estate because he was overseeing the master planning for Ko'olina.
Wow, interesting. Well, no more questions. We better have a motion. Yeah. As much fun as this is.
Okay, I will move to list the Walter E. and Muriel Flanders residence at 36 Old Pali Place, Honolulu, on the State Historic Register under Criterion C, and put it forward for consideration for listing in the National Register of Historic Places.
Great. Second. Any further discussion?
Yes, I have one recommendation that is just kind of going forward recommendation, and I should have mentioned this because Axel's nomination also had the same problem. On the maps, there's a lot of things that are outlined in color. When I use my black and white printer, I cannot see it. So it's a visual accessibility issue. If when you're calling something out, if it could be a bolded line or a hatch.
What do you mean?
I can do that. It happens over and over. Yours, others, you know, it's just something. No. It's something folks should keep in mind.
Yeah, because you can just pick it off the BLU site.
Because with visual accessibility, sometimes things are scanned or posted in non-color,
mm-hmm.
or you print them in non-color, right. And there's easy ways to get around that to where you can still see it. So
that's actually
always important for visual accessibility.
And it also helps when I try and when they have two lots.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like outlined in blue, and I'm looking, and I'm like, okay, I cannot tell which one of these it is.
That's easy.
So yeah, it's easy. It's just a recommendation going forward for just generally. I think it might be good for you to kind of look at as well. 508 accessibility and think, you know, is important, and black and white versus color, you know, people are colorblind, you know, there's a whole accessibility issue around that generally with government documents.
So Photoshop you need to use to do that?
No, you just make a hatch.
Do
or
it by
like
hand,
yeah, or just put a hatch. If you're in any software, you can make a little fill with hatch. It takes a second.
Okay, that's something new to learn.
Crazy.
Like Word lets you do that too.
Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah, you just make a shape and make a hatched fill.
Oh, okay.
Or even like a gray fill or, you know, just so that it shows up when different. It's not color.
It'd be fun to see how it works.
Yeah.
So,
I'm old enough to remember when you had sheets of this overlay decal. You
had
to cut it out.
You had to cut it out and make sure it was the same shape as the little where you needed to.
That makes them not so ancient, right? The slide thing threw me off and my students just started making
Or you could use your
really
photograph
empty.
And your straight edge and just go like this.
I did that hatching too. I remember that. Vellum touch. All right. Well,
anyway,
I think
that's
we
all
can.
I had for that.
Thank you. That's a good suggestion. So,
Could I clarify the level of significance? Local?
Local. Yes. Sorry. I think I might not have stated that.
Yeah. Well, why don't I call the question? Okay. All those in favor for the property at 36 Old Pali Place being listed on the State Register and recommended for the National Register. So I think everybody's raising their hands. Unanimous. Okay. So now we have the Charles and Alice Loomis residence.
Yes. Okay, the Charles and Alice Loomis residence is in Manoa at 2117 Kakela Place. It's it actually borders Punahou School, the back of Punahou School. The date of construction is 1927. And I found in the newspaper the building permit, but they didn't tell us the architect. Mm-hmm. So the architect is unknown on this house. But I'm quite sure it was an architect. It's quite well designed. The Charles and Alice Loomis residence, significant at the local level under Criterion C, is a good example of a colonial revival style house built in Honolulu during the 1920s. And again, it includes a number of distinctive features. It's typical of its period, its design, materials, workmanship, and construction. Good. This is the front of the house. The house, it's a two-story house, garage underneath. The first floor has a large, actually, for the period, I'm surprised it has such a large window, but I'm quite sure it's original. And it's actually a box bay window. And it's for the living room, which runs across the entire facade, the front of the house. The roof is a gambrel roof, and you see the dormers coming out for the second floor. That's, here you can see the gambrel roof from the side. And again, the gambrel came in originally in colonial times. In the 1600s, the Dutch introduced it, but by the 1700s, it was being popularized throughout the colonies. And so it was a colonial.
I think the British had a gambrel roof houses too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe. And it's not as ornate as the Georgian style. And so most of the colonial that do follow that style is before the Georgian period. Next. And, oh, let me go back two slides. Sorry, didn't set it up. To the right of the house, you can see a walkway. And the house is entered from the side rather than from the front. So okay, now we can go back. Here you can see the entry. The little awning window to the left, there's actually a small, very small living quarters underneath the house. It was locked, so I couldn't get in it. I got the description by looking in that window. And next slide, in the garage, in the back, you can see the lattice. I could look through the lattice and see the shower and the bathroom. And the other section had essentially a small half kitchen and sleeping quarters. But the house itself is in much better shape and entered through. It has its original door, its original handle, original hardware. Even the original screen doors on the house. And again, this house has Kanek walls, Kanek ceiling. It's a hardwood floor. I think it's oak. Next. And here's looking the other way. Essentially, the hallway runs laterally across is the organizational spine for the first floor. Here you can see the Kanek ceiling with the paneling. Right next to the door is another original door, single panel doors throughout the house. All of them have their original handles, I think. And this leads into a study. Next. The study is very nicely finished. And it's has double hung windows on all three sides, so it's very well cross ventilated. Next. Here you can see the side looking out at the entry backside, built-in shelving, panel ceiling again. Next. This one also has push button. They're not throughout the house, but this was still there. You can see the door has its original handle as well. And then it actually has two doors. The one door we saw coming in from the hall, and then the one on the right is actually a back door that goes out onto a lanai. And so, which, again, is a nice feature and allows for the cross breeze going through. Next, here is that lanai on the back of the house. The door to the right goes into the kitchen. Next, and again, that's the kitchen door right we're looking at. The study door to the left and to the right, there's a little bathroom. That door that has its original double hung window sill, TNG walls. The living room, like I said, runs across, rather impressive. You can see the paneling on the walls, also on the ceiling. The box bay has a built-in underneath it, original oak floors. Next, all the double hung windows. Here you can see the main box bay window looking out at the driveway. And I'm quite sure it's original with that transom above. And again, 6-over-1 double hung windows. The seats underneath, next slide. You have storage underneath. And then you can see from the hallway, there's 2 flat arched openings that go into the living room. The one from the hallway, the second one goes into the dining room. Next. And here's the dining room. And it has its built-in buffet. Interesting handles it has, wooden handles for pulls. And again, here you're looking back. And even here, they have, it juts out from the main body so you can have a window for improved circulation. And then 2 windows on the east side. And then swinging door going into the kitchen. The kitchen's been reworked and remodeled. It still has, I'm pretty sure the tongue and groove partition is original. It sort of blocks off the cooking side from the rest of the kitchen area. You can see the door going outside to front porch. Also, the kitchen has double hung windows, still all intact. Next slide. Porcelain sink and cabinetry. And then this is a stairway going up, which we could just barely see next to the study. The first floor, Kanak walls, then it goes to tongue and groove upstairs. Again, very simple balustrade and newel posts. There's, again, a double hung window in above the landing, also an original light above the landing. And then again, a lateral running hallway, built-in linen closet with drawers as well. And again, this one has 4 bedrooms, one in each corner. Here you can see 2 of the doorways for them. Next, again, all have original handles and hardware. This is one of the rooms. You can see it keeps its Kanex ceiling, has very small crown molding. And all the rooms have double hung windows on 2 sides to provide ventilation. Bathroom has been remodeled, but it still has its original ceiling and walls. And wainscot, double hung window, the bathtub. That's it. But again, a very intact house.
Very interesting, yeah. Good house. Got a little, some of the finishes have kind of like this little like leftover craftsman period.
Yeah,
a little bit,
very
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
And so I'm fairly sure there's an architect. And I'm sorry, I don't know who it is.
So the view doesn't reach toward Punahou, toward the Mackay side. The view is all looking.
Oh,
Malka, huh?
Yeah, this looks Malka. And Punahou, actually the right boundary and the rear boundary are both Punahou School.
And I used to drop my kid off there in the back door.
Oh,
back
really?
Road, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually Kakela, this is the last house on Kakela.
Uh-huh.
And then it just goes right, there's a gate that goes right into
right.
Punahou.
Right, that's how I used to drop her off there.
Yeah, no, there's too many, there's no view because there's trees. We're
uh-huh.
going to do the drone, but couldn't see anything from the trees.
Just got to cut those all down. And then, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Anybody have stuff questions? Huh?
No questions.
So, I wonder what that space underneath, This is almost an inside joke. What was that space underneath possibly for? The residential area underneath.
Maid's quarters or something?
It's a joke. That's the joke.
What's the joke?
The maid's quarters.
Oh.
Once we had a big discussion about a place that had a maid's quarters and the presenter insisted it wasn't a maid's quarters.
Oh, no, put very well.
That incident, and that turned out they did.
It could be because the laundry is right behind as well.
Yes. Well,
I would entertain a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion that the Charles and Alice Loomis residence at 2117 Coachella Place be added to the Boy Historic Register under Criterion C and forwarded to the National Register at a local level of significance. Did I hit everything? All right, cool.
I'll second that.
I did forget to ask. So there's Mark Helving lives on Loomis Street further up into Manoa. So Loomis were a prominent like mission family, right?
There's several Loomises. Mr. Loomis came from the mainland. He graduated from the University of Missouri.
So they weren't mission.
No, he was not at all. He graduated in education and he came out here to work at the YMCA. And so he was running boys training. And then he actually became the secretary for the territorial YMCA.
Okay.
And then him and Frank Atherton formed, what was the name of it? The Institute of Pacific Relations in 1925. And he became the head of that institute, which was like the Mid-Pacific Institute. Both of them were promoting East-West relationships and that he was head of that until 1938.
Makes sense because they gave the Atherton building there at UH, the pink building.
Yeah.
That was the same Atherton who founded that organization.
Okay, yes.
Are you finished with it?
Oh, yeah, do we need a second?
Yeah.
We had a second. We just need to vote now.
Yes.
So, all those in favor? Thank you. Rich. On this back.
Thank you.
You can chat.
Thank you.
Could I get a clarification on the first nomination? Tiada and I didn't have it locked down for the local, for the level of significance and whether it was going to be forwarded to the National Register.
I believe it was.
Local and yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don.
I also looked up the legislative records for Bill Chapman's first meeting term.
Uh-huh.
And it started in April of 2018.
April of 2018?
Yes. Even though you might not have served, you were technically on the board April 19, 2018. And so this would be your last one.
Would be my last. So we'd be replaced coming up, right?
Yes.
So when do I do my last meeting?
This is your last meeting.
Oh, today is not?
Well, thank you for that short term as the chairman of the...
No, it's not. Mary, I looked it up. So I wasn't going to say anything, but I looked up his 22 nomination. His term goes through June, so he can make May.
His 22 nomination...
He has a second nomination in 20. You can't be nominated at the same time for two terms. So he's renominated again in 22. And that one went through June 26th. I wasn't going to say anything because I wanted him to stay to 27. But there's a second nomination. I looked it up. I literally wasn't going to say anything. But yeah, he has. I can send it to you, Mary.
Okay, yeah, we can talk
can
about
come
it.
Back in May.
So you get one more time.
I was like, oh, no. I'm not letting it be his last meeting. That's not.
Because technically... Even though it overlaps, the regulation says that you cannot have 8 consecutive years.
No, he can't. He can go up to 8.
Not more than 8.
Not more than 8.
Not more than 8.
Yes. And so the first session
joined early before.
Started in April of 2018.
It would go with, but I mean, he would have been April to June, but I looked it up. Hold on, I'll pull it up for you. But it's... I looked it up and it said his term ends June 26.
It's true. The last session approved it to June 26. But
so
it does exceed, yeah, it does exceed the 8 years. It would exceed the 8 years if we went to the end of your term.
But it would go from when he sat, right? So if he didn't sit till after, right? So like Adrian and I were appointed, whatever, midterm, but our terms didn't start till after, right? So it's not the confirmation date. It's the date you sit.
I don't think that's written anywhere. I think we can only go by what we have documented. That's it.
Well, we can check with boards and commissions, because I don't think we're going to resolve this without talking to them about what the rule is.
Just keep me posted.
Yeah. We'll let you know.
I'm happy to serve as chair for a single meeting or for two meetings.
Well, and the other thing might be is like we could theoretically have you back if you want to come back after a year, like you have a year cool off period and then you
do it. Yeah, you got to cool off.
I did that before.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So if you wanted to come back.
If you want me back, and
yeah.
I'm not willing to give up Bill that easily. Like, I'm going to, yeah. So I put in the language, and then but my understanding is, right, like it's, yeah, but I put in the GM too.
Yeah, we'll talk to boards and commissions in the AG's office just to make sure that we have the date right, and then Bill will let you know when we're going to be out there.
Thanks, Jessica.
Can you let the rest of us know too?
Oh yeah, of course. I'll let Bill know
first.
Cliffhanger
otherwise.
Well, I've got to say, I can't. Some days it seems like I've been on the board just forever. Other times it seems it just flew by. But I always like serving, and I like meeting the people, and I love seeing the properties. So we have a few more items of business. We have nominations submitted for the May 15th meeting, and the next meeting is scheduled for that day, and we will not be able to have a site visit because we won't have a quorum then either, right?
We don't have one now. So.
Two-thirds quorum to have a site visit, but this is quorum enough to have a board meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
They have specific requirements
for
a site visit.
Okay.
Do you have to choose a new chair then? Because if Bill is going to go off and we're going to do that in the spring. And then do you have new people to come on?
No. not till June.
We do have one that potentially will be confirmed. And so most likely in the August 4th, we'll have that number.
So if we lose Bill, we lose quorum, though, to have meetings, right? It's going through us. So we may not have a May meeting if we don't.
That's true. We might, depending upon when the appointment hearing is held, as soon as they are confirmed by
right by the board.
Yeah, then we're good. So I don't know I haven't heard that they scheduled that.
Didn't we in the past allow people to serve until they were replaced?
Well, you had to have the committee hearing first, though.
Oh, yeah.
The committee hearing, and then there's
or you have to be named in an interim appointment.
Yeah.
So
you have to be named before the legislature starts. So if you're named during the legislature like this individual was named when the committee was in session, then you have to wait for their committee hearing. But if they're meeting before, then they're in an interim appointment and can serve till the end of the legislative session, unless they're being confirmed in that session. And then if they're not confirmed in that session, then they can serve the rest of the session and then they're done. But if they are, then they can just pick up their term from that confirmation hearing.
So what's that mean?
So that means that the individual who's nominated, if they get appointed
in the committee hearing, then they're good. But if a committee hearing isn't held before the next scheduled meeting, then we wouldn't have quorum for it. So we'd have to defer all nominations until the next meeting.
So the particular wording of the governor's message had a start date and end date. So it's a little different because the previous appointment only had the end date. But his nominee, his appointment had a start date.
What was the start date?
Who's did? Bills?
Who?
The potential candidate.
Okay.
Oh, the new candidate. Sorry. Yeah. Good question.
So
then we can't have the May meeting then. If the start date isn't until June 30th, then that means the appointment wouldn't start until June 30th, regardless.
So that's always been my understanding, right? It starts after the set. So I'm looking at Bill's 2018. It also doesn't have a start date. And Bill doesn't actually sit in his first meeting to January 2019. I looked up all the meeting notes. He doesn't sit. You had a full board all of 2018 and Bill wasn't on it. So I would really check with boards and commissions because he, like, I'm looking at all the minutes. Bill's first meeting is actually 2019.
That's what I remembered too.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll check.
Yeah. In which case, he would actually be able to hold over too if he doesn't hit his 8 years, right? If it's not for until he sits in his first meeting, which would be January 2019, then he would actually have till January 27th to sit.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to check the math and all this. And then...
Yeah. I have it. I can send it. I'm just smoothing away on my little
keyboard. Yeah. We have to get that straightened out to determine if the main meeting is held, but as a matter of course for this agenda item, I think we just need to go through the motion instead of approving
the date
of the next meeting, because we still may not have we still wouldn't have enough of a quorum to have the site visitors, but we might have enough of a quorum to have the meeting. But in the next meeting, if Bill and that other individual are both seated for the following meeting after the May meeting, then you could theoretically have both the same room and the meeting. If that makes any kind of sense to anybody.
Absolutely.
I think it makes sense to me. I'm not sure it makes sense to me.
Just keep
figure it out
in
May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have a meeting in May, but we might be able to have a site visit at a meeting in August.
The following,
August.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is typically the biggest agenda of the year, so.
Yeah.
Yes. Follow on the biggest agenda of the year. Is it possible, if you don't have the May meeting, to have a July meeting? And I don't know if the board have to do that, or can staff just do that?
It's quarterly, so it probably have to be.
We could theoretically reschedule. We're allowed to schedule another meeting, but the biggest thing would be getting consensus among the board members, and then two, in terms of, yes, we can have this meeting, and then two, having availability for everyone, and then three, finding the space for the meeting, and then doing all of that and having following the publication dates, we still wouldn't be able to do site visits, but we'd be able to hold a meeting.
Given that there are only three nominations right now for May.
Yeah, right now for
seems like
August, I think I have one on the dozen.
Does everybody realize Nick also has a GM for this session? He's been renominated.
He changed his mind.
Oh, okay.
He was renominated, but
okay.
He never accepted it officially.
Okay. So maybe they can change the start date, or Gov can just give Noah an interim appointment as well. Like, that's another option, right? Just ask him to do an interim.
We can reach out to their office. I just don't know how the rules apply now that the session, they would have to, I don't know.
That's right.
I don't think that they can make an interim appointment.
You're right. No, you're right. Yeah, you can't do an interim appointment during session. You're right. So, I mean, I don't disagree with Adrian. I mean, I was going to be in Seattle anyway, so if we cancel, I'm not going to cry or anything.
I'll just make sure we bring lunch for August.
For August, yeah.
We have to have a party for Bill. I refuse. If Bill, this is Bill's last meeting, I refuse to let that go down without some celebration of Bill. And Bill should always be celebrated. So I would like to also put that out there.
Well, his 1 year sabbatical until he comes back.
Yes.
That's his.
But I'll take everybody to lunch at Lady Elaine. We can go to Lady Elaine in Manoa and have a nice little, you know, Mr. Rogers neighborhood lunch.
Very nice of your trip. Thanks.
You do so much for this board, Bill. Okay, well, we'll figure it out. But I mean, I'm for canceling May if we can.
For now, the date works.
We should know soon, right?
Keep it on every moment.
We'll know soon. So we now have time for a staff update.
Yeah, is that next?
Yep.
That's okay. We've got a lot, because obviously Ledge, and then there's just a lot been going on. Per usual, from our last hearing, meeting, going at the national level, so I'll try to, like, go through this pretty quickly. I'm not going to go through all the bills that are being presented right now that we're tracking, just the ones that we've provided testimony on thus far. Today is the cutoff date, so anything that hasn't, to my understanding, at least been heard once, and for those bills that have three different committees that they've been assigned to, if they haven't made it to at least two of those three committees, they're done. So the first one is the only bill that is a shifty bill coming out of DLNR, and that's House Bill 2325. That bill will allow us in CWRM to hold exempt positions. Currently, the majority of our positions are exempt. They were created as exempt positions, but there's a rule in the state labor law that requires all exempt positions be turned into civil service positions within 3 years of them being created. Shifty is asking to be able to keep exempt position because it allows us to base salary offers not off of the civil service schedule, but based off of our evaluation of their work performance, like prior work experience and education. We've had at least one recent situation where we tried to bring somebody in who is going into a civil service position at a higher tier level, but because of the DHERD evaluation of that person's qualifications, they brought them in at the very lowest level, which I don't feel is acceptable. Like, if it's our money, we should be able to spend it and to boost people's salary based on our evaluation of the qualifications rather than some arbitrary, like, pay schedule that's set by the union contract that is too restrictive. Because it prevents us from being competitive and retaining employees and all that kind of stuff. It also informs, like, how we're able to give them pay raises, and that's a whole other conversation. So that bill has been making it forward pretty steadily. We tried to do this last session and it didn't get very far, but I think people are more open-minded about the need for either updating the union contract and the civil service structure, and then also allowing, until that's done, allowing offices to maintain exempt positions. So it doesn't prohibit those staff people from being union members and being covered by the union. It just is a different kind of contract they get.
Is anybody opposing that?
HGEA is opposing it right now.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody else seems to be supporting it so far. And I understand why HGEA is opposing it, because it does make employees technically at will in at least language, but being on the administrative side of things, that doesn't mean that we can just fire people at will. Like, there's a rules that we have to follow that are very similar to the union contract that require you to work with an employee before you just get rid of them. So it's not a license to fire. Then there's two bills that were submitted by OHA that we're tracking. One is HB 2104, and that relates to the burial councils. It kind of redefines what is quorum, because that is the biggest issue of the councils being able to meet on a monthly basis. It essentially says something to the effect of quorum can be as low as three individuals or no fewer than three individuals. And it's the majority of the number of council members appointed. So if like the Oahu Island Burial Council can seat up to 7 individuals, but if there's only 5 appointed, then quorum is 4, if that makes sense. Instead of trying to meet, I think, the quorum of five. So something like that. So we're supporting that bill. And then there's House Bill 2102 and Senate Bill 2443. And I can't remember the Senate bill version of the Burial Council bill right now, but so Senate Bill 2443 and House Bill 2102 is perhaps the most significant in my mind of OHA's bills, and that is to pull back some of the 1642.2 exemptions that were passed last session to clarify that residential properties that have projects on them that include ground disturbance aren't exempt from 60 review. So that is something that we tried to kill at the very last second, that bill last year, because it was going all fine. It was just a redefinition of historic properties. And then at the very last second, language was added to expand upon the 1642.2 exemptions. And now it's created chaos because it doesn't take into consideration responsibilities of property owners and developers regarding Kahuna and their 1643 responsibilities. So this bill, I think, will fix that issue. And then there's a bill coming from out of Senator Ilgun's office. It's House Bill 1710 and Senate Bill 2341. That's a speed task force bill. And I reviewed that bill before they presented it, and I'm cool with the language. It's pretty fair, where it puts in certain stipulations of on project proponents of what a complete submittal is, so they can't just arbitrarily submit something that's incomplete in order to start the review clock and to start pointing fingers at Shifty saying, oh, our project isn't reviewed, because we do have a lot of that. Over 50% of the projects submitted to Shifty are incomplete, like absolutely incomplete and unacceptable, so we're having to kick them back. While at the same time, a project proponent can say, oh, Shifty's taking so long for us to review their project. So this bill defines what a complete submittal is, and then it also says that once Shifty has reviewed a complete submittal and certified it as complete, that's when the review clock starts, and if we don't review the project within a maximum of 90 days, then the project proponent may either assume concurrence or move on without Shifty's concurrence and get a building permit to proceed with a project. So that one is fair in my mind because it's pretty similar to the Section 106 requirements. And it does afford Shifty a significant amount of time to still review projects that are already in the rules. Like that, the timelines that they're using are already the timelines that are in the rules that exist today. So it's not like shortening or reviewing those. Other notable bills that have been introduced is SB 2477, and that started off as a program to create markers over in Waikai, but we recommended that instead of doing just a few historical markers for Waikai, that maybe they should develop a statewide marker program, and that language was added. So if that bill goes through, we might have a statewide marker program for historic sites that Shifty would manage, and we would develop like design guidance and stuff like that for those markers. SB 2083 has passed its first committee, and that would establish a statewide survey program managed by SHPD for state-owned historic properties. And then there's SB 1301 that proposes significant changes to archaeological surveys. It has some amendments to 6E and stuff like that. And I think the definition of historic property that's also interesting that has made it through its first committee, and I think it only had one more to go to.
Yes,
Bowles?
I have a quick question. Does the complete submittal keep the 60% design language? Because I know that's often challenging.
What do you mean the 60% design?
So you have to show 60% engineering designs for a complete submittal. And that's, especially if you're trying to come in early for review, that's not always feasible, right? And it's a bit
inconsistent
with the idea that you would want to redesign if you have potential sites. So has that been changed?
I don't know that that language has been changed. It certainly could be. I think we'd be open for discussion on that. I think, though, that the language for allowing for phased reviews and building off of that a little bit, I know that there's concern about keeping the... There's already language in 6E that allows for phased review, but there was a lot of concern from certain public organizations about keeping that and the legality of it. But I think that, like, if someone wanted to come in at, say, a 10%, 20%, or 30% phase, if that 60 wasn't changed, that we could do it under the programmatic approach and say, we don't know a whole lot about the project development, but we'll just review it under a programmatic approach and develop some kind of an agreement for the project itself so that as the design is developed, we'll create a custom structure for that one individual project. But I don't really see that happening unless it's a big development project.
No, I mean, it happens actually quite a bit. And then the other one that happens is like just land use changes, right? Like subdivisions or things like that. Like you don't have design at that point.
Yeah.
So that's another one that gets held up. And quite frankly, because there's no ground disturbance at all, it shouldn't be applicable there, right? But you should be able to move reviews through.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's something that could be brought up in the next round of committees. I don't see that bill dying anytime soon.
Okay.
It made it through both the House and two of the House and two of the Senate committees. And I can't remember if there was a third. It might just be going to crossover now.
No, I'm sure they're all going to crossover, right? Like I mean, anything left is money committees at this point, right? First decking means you have to be through your subject matter committees and then you go to your money committees. So
yeah,
unlikely they'd die there.
So yeah, I don't know. We can bring that up. But I'm not opposed to that. I just really want the permit set, whatever that set is, if we're for the 6042 triggers. 6E is a different game altogether because those projects can come in at any time. So can 6010. But we have a larger list of bills, but I'm essentially going to be purging that list, so it's useless to share it with you guys at this point until we finish purging everything that got killed today.
Yeah.
So once that's done, if you guys want to see, we shared our list with Historic Hawaii Foundation, and HHF shared their list with us. So my list is like kind of a combination of theirs and ours. But if you ever want to see it, we can send it out to you.
That would be great.
So in terms of national news, there's some, obviously, like, National Trust is doing a bunch of lawsuits right now related to the White House and the FBI building and the EEOB related to the White House is kind of a tricky situation because of the 106 exemptions, right? The EEOB, though, is not exempt from 106, nor is the FBI building or the Department of Homeland Security properties. So there have been a number of moves to, one, paint EEOB, which is a granite, I believe, facade. Like, everything is, like, carved out of granite, right?
It's a gray granite.
They want to paint it, apparently, white,
uh-huh.
Which is not recommended to paint stone or brick for obvious reasons. And for those watching at home, you don't want to paint a solid surface material like that because it just allows water to get trapped between the paint and the solid surface material and erode away and destroy the mortar and all sorts of things. And you'll have a crumbling facade at the end of the day. So especially if you don't use the right kind of paint. Technically, I guess there is a right kind of paint that you could theoretically use, but it's not necessarily 100%.
Well, mainly it locks you into having to repaint. That's the main problem.
Can't remove the paint. It's not. It's a non-reversible change.
I mean, unless you try to go through sandblasting or power washing, and that in and of itself has its own kind
I guess he's stuck in the Georgian federal period.
Yeah, chemical removal. All of those things are not necessarily,
There's no compelling reason to paint.
Yeah, there's no compelling reason other than aesthetic reasons, like somebody's aesthetic preference. So there's from my understanding, several lawsuits that are in the works, either by National Trust for Historic Preservation or what is it, the National Council on Preservation? I can't remember. That's not their name, but it's something like that. It's like NCAB or something like
Advisory
that.
Council?
It's not the Advisory
Council.
Advisory
Council is government.
Yeah. But there's another organization that's like a conservancy and preservation.
So the National Capital one, like specifically, there's one that deals with just the National Capital buildings.
Yeah. So there's, and we spoke to National Trust about, in a meeting recently, about some other organizations that we know of that might also be interested in providing information or support in some way, shape, or form. It's just an informational past experience situation, so we were not in any way, shape, or form asking for providing inappropriate information. What else? So in addition to that, which those lawsuits are likely going to take years, ACHP also has some shenanigans afoot with a new council that's been seated, and the new council chair who has been seated but not yet confirmed by Congress. One of the items includes a warfighting readiness program comment for the Army that is so grossly open-ended that it essentially allows the Army to do whatever they want without consulting with any state historic preservation officer or tribal historic preservation officer, regardless of that land, if that land is Army-owned or if it's leased. So, and it also allows for that program comment to be adopted by any other Department of Defense agency, and has language that allows it to be modified, like amended, in any way, shape, or form, simply by agreement between the chair of the advisory council and the Army's federal preservation officer. So it is so grossly overreaching. It is the most unprofessional programmatic alternative that I've ever seen come out of the advisory council. And it really, I think, is testing their, like, what is actually in their power to do under the Code of Federal Regulations and the U.S. Code.
I heard it got deferred because there was substantial backlash to it when it was presented last week.
Yeah. So to your point, the advisory council met last week, Wednesday, I want to say. And we've heard the same thing from advisory council, that they deferred it for 45 days because if it came up for a vote that day, it would fail. So I think that they're hoping that in the next 45 days they can convince council members to vote in favor. So I don't have hope that it will die. I'm expecting them to change minds and to have it pass. I will be shocked if it doesn't. But I think that if it does, there will be loss for several. The other thing that they voted on was to examine the Section 106 regulations at 36 CFR 3800. Some folks at advisory council that I spoke to seem to be optimistic about it, and that this is coming up because we've requested, UCHP has requested, that Section 106 be cleaned up, because I think we all know that there's some weaknesses or clarifications that could be made, but I think that at this point, trying to open up 36 CFR Part 800 at this point is too risky because of all of the significant amendments or executive orders that have been passed to strip NEPA of its oversight kind of framework that it creates for the impact of projects on the environment and the use of taxpayer dollars to do that. So I think that's kind of a naive position to think that it would be limited to that, because I don't think past precedent has shown the Army Military Housing Program comment that was passed under the last administration gutted a whole section of 106, and this was under a past administration, right? A whole series of Section 106 consultation requirements for the Army on their military housing, and then the the Native Hawaiian organization exemption, without that being passed, without some sort of guardrail to ensure that the right NHO organization was picked to be the one to do the preservation work for traditional ultra properties, I think that was a complete overreach too. Like, I don't mind that our office being cut out of the framework, but you need to have some sort of NHO-led, like, decision-making, like, process, right, for ensuring that the right NHO is chosen. We're already seeing issues with that, you know, related to a couple preservation projects and cultural properties where either the method of preservation work being done is not necessarily correct, or there's entities trying to inject themselves into the management of a property that they have no business being involved in. So we'll see what happens with that.
I have a question. Is there a scenario where they just basically eliminate ACHP like they did with CEQ? Right, and they just, so, right, so what they did with NEPA was they basically eliminated, through an executive order, like, any CEQ oversight of NEPA, and they basically delegated it out directly to the agencies, right? So he eliminates the CEQ rules, and he says, federal agencies, just go regulate yourselves when it comes to NEPA. Is that a potential scenario here, where he just basically says, we're eliminating Part 100, and you folks co-create your own rules?
That's sort of what they're doing with the Warfighting Readiness Program comment, right? But I could see them using that and the Military Housing Program comment that they passed under the last administration as evidence that, oh, look, Army is doing everything internally, and, oh, they're being so responsible. There's no need to include SHPOs or TIPOs anymore. And, oh, we've got it. ACHP will make sure that they're held accountable. But the problem with that is that the council is appointed by the administration.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, there's supposed to be some holdovers from past administrations. They're sort of on a, what's it called? Not really good. You'll have holdovers.
It's like a staggered schedule.
Scattered, whatever it's called, schedule. But it's my understanding that most of the council was effectively told dismissed, right? And they didn't have enough members for quorum when this new administration came on board. So most of the new council members are administrative representatives, if they're not, like, representing Nick Shippo, the National Council of State Historic Preservation Officers, or the National Council of Tribal Preservation Officers, or Advisory Council, and I can't remember what other outside entities. I think there's a few leftover holdovers too, and that was enough to influence that correct common goal that I...
And that's my fear, right? Is they're just going to get rid of the rest of them, because that's effectively what they did, right? I mean, they just basically...
Yeah. The way that this program comment, the war fighting readiness and the housing program comment reads, is essentially the Army can do whatever they want. They just report it in a report annually, right? And that to advisory council. And that's all, that's the only entity that they report to. And they only report to that entity through an annual report.
Yeah.
So it effectively, like...
There are no checks or balances or input or comment.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that would be...
Yeah, and then the scary thing with the warfighting readiness is, like I said, any other DOD agency can sign on to that. Just
it also
by
is,
agreement between the Army FPO and the Advisory Council.
And you said it was also applicable on their leased lands as well?
Yeah.
Because that
so
would
like
be a huge impact, obviously, here.
Yeah.
That would be really...
So that is one of the comments that we've made, is like, it is absolutely inappropriate and completely undermines state rights to suggest that you can apply this program comments to leased lands, right, without our consent. Because
there's a lot of leases, military leases are all coming up right now across the state. And so I wonder if that is going to actually be the source of some backlash against renewing those leases, if there's a possibility
I don't know.
That it will have that kind of effect.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I mean, we've tried to provide information. We're happy to provide information to anyone in places of power when we decide those leases. I think that that is likely something that could inform it, but I don't know that it's something that will inevitably decide it. I think one of the concerns for the leases is that it'll just, those properties will be taken through eminent domain. And that could be part of the negotiation too, about how do you balance all of this? right? Like, how do you try to do the best for, you know, the people of Hawaii? And in most cases with these properties, Native Hawaiian organizations, because most of the properties leased by the Department of Defense has significant cultural significance to them, right? Mm-hmm. And cultural properties that exist there. So I don't know. It's tricky. The whole thing is tricky to kind of try to sort out how to move forward through it. So I don't know.
Well, that's good information. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. What's the word on federal funding? What's the NICHPO word on?
So right now, our federal funding is has maintained its projected levels through the different funding packages. So the HPF fund is okay right now. I don't know how this will continue. So I think we're all just optimistic and also very skeptical. There was an attempt to pull back HPF funding at the beginning of this current administration, I want to say sometime last spring. But then there were some lawsuits, including the state of Hawaii suit, not just because of the HPF fund, there was a bunch of funding that was being pulled back. That was one of them. And then after that lawsuit, all the funding was released. So I don't know that that means that it won't happen again. I don't believe that to be true.
It's hard to know day to day sometimes in the current climate what's happening.
But at the moment, we're okay. I will say, though, that the FEMA grant that we applied for, that the state of Hawaii applied for to help support preservation efforts in Lahaina, we asked for some positions, funding to support some positions for archaeology and then cultural monitors, that we could have our staff go out and do cultural monitoring instead of project proponents who are trying to rebuild in Lahaina having to hire their own monitors. That request was denied. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard of any other states who had emergencies that that funding would go for. I haven't heard of anybody receiving it. So we just found that out, I think, last week. And it's on my to-do list to go try to figure out who actually was awarded that funding, if it was indeed awarded at all, over that money. Because I think it was only $40 or $50 million. And I'm fine if we didn't get it, if somebody else in Lahaina did, because it was open to different organizations and municipalities to apply for. So if the County of Maui received something, or Lahaina Restoration Foundation or some other organization received it, that's fine. I'm happy as long as somebody got something. But if that money wasn't released at all, or none of the entities in Hawaii who applied for something got anything, I'm going to be very concerned about how money is being awarded for emergency response. So,
another question I have about the tax, the ITC bills still, I mean, does that still follow the same guidelines, and is it still part of Trump's tax package?
For the what?
Investment tax credits?
I don't know. Are you talking about the historic preservation tax credits?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are fine. Yeah, I don't think that they're going anywhere. I haven't heard anything.
That used to be sort of popular across the political spectrum.
Yeah. I don't foresee that program going anywhere. I think the most that I've heard out of that program is that their travel has been restricted. They used to they bring in a lot of money in fees, and they used to spend that money on paying for travel for different state employees to come to one location to do a training every year or every other year. And my understanding, they haven't had an in-person training in a couple of years now, right, Mary? I think the last one was 2021, 2022, something like that.
I think it was 2023.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And we, for the register, we have the same reviewer?
Yes, but for tax credits, we don't.
Who's the reviewer?
For the
National Register nomination?
It is Astrid.
It's not Paul.
Someone there.
Paul retired?
Yeah, Paul retired, and John, forgetting his last name, retired. John was our tax credit reviewer, Paul was our national
So Astrid Lieberman, she used to be the Shifty also. But she's the Park Service reviewer.
She used to work here?
That's good.
Yeah.
I still remember her. Do you remember her, Doc? Astrid?
I don't remember.
She served as administrator for a minute, right?
What's her last name again?
Lieberman.
Lieberman.
Yeah, I thought she was appointed as administrator of SHP after...
Yeah. Astrid Lieberman? Does that ring a bell with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
it. Yeah. That's nice to have someone... Maybe get a little aloha from her.
So then we're getting close to the end. So then next on my list is our statewide preservation plan. So there were consultations that were held before the holidays, I think last year, that were stakeholder focused. Based on those stakeholder focused consultation meetings, which included like architects, archaeologists, cultural practitioners, burial council members, I can't remember if there was who else, but a draft plan has been written based off those consultations and the ones from the previous draft preservation plan that should be started, but it wasn't ever finished. That draft preservation plan will be posted publicly for the public to review, and then a series of public meetings and stakeholder meetings will be held on that draft plan. And then once those comments come in, we'll reflect those in the preservation plan, and then it should be published. And the published date, publication date is should be no later than June 30th of this year.
So, when is this board's opportunity to be involved with that process?
You guys, like last time, I think there was a scheduled meeting for Island Burial Council members, like essentially for all of SHPD's boards and commissions to meet together collectively and kind of get you all in a room together. No, it wasn't IBC's.
It was separate. It was IBC's and then all the CRCs and the
CRCs, that's right. Because we wanted to throw the CRCs in the same chat or consultation meeting as the review board because they don't get a whole lot of exposure to this level of doing things, right? So there will be a follow-up meeting for that, but I'm hoping at the next review board meeting if we hold the main one, I was hoping to agendize this on the main meeting because it's preservation month and all of that. But if we can't hold the main meeting, then we'll have to limit it to
We can do the May meeting as an informational meeting, one way or another.
Yeah, we can do that. That's right. We don't need quorum.
But then you don't need action.
We're voting on it.
But we could instead of like taking the whole day and making you come here, we can do it online instead of.
It'll be online because I will be on the mainland.
I think we just need to have a staff person in the room if any member of the public wants to come and tune into the meeting, but we could have you guys all tune in remotely if that's what we need for you. And just leave it as an informational meeting to talk about the preservation plan because there wouldn't be anything for you guys to make a motion on.
No.
Okay. Yeah, it would be good. I feel like we haven't really been tied into that, at least since I've been on the board.
I agree.
Yeah.
There is also a public website. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
And we did get, I'm just going to jump in because I'm writing it. We got like close to 300 responses to the public survey. So it was a huge level of response to people who did those. So there was a number of, so I can make sure everybody gets individual. Jess, I thought you said the SHPD staff sent out emails to all the boards and commissions.
I haven't seen.
Yeah, we did. We sent out emails to all of the groups. We sent out an email to all of you guys for that focus meeting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we sent out an email to all of you guys, plus all the members of the.
I'm sorry.
I don't think we sent it to all the members of the CRC. I think we sent it to all of the CLG staff people and asked them to forward it on to their CRC members because we didn't have that list of all the CRC members. But yeah. I emailed you all the link and all the meeting information.
Right, I couldn't attend that meeting.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, it would be helpful to be a little more tied in some way or another way. I know there's the public website, there's these comment things going on, but, like, this board being the Historic Places Review Board, it seems like maybe something a little more specific to this board would be helpful, just since we do, you know, have the impacts of whatever happens in the plan will come to us for decisions eventually, right? And we have some expertise, you know, within this board that, that you
and,
know,
and
should
maybe,
have some level of comment that's maybe different than a public comment.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, if we were to meet with the burial council and other people, I think we, our voice might get lost.
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't recommend having these with burial council. Like, we didn't do that. So burial council and descendants each had their own, and then the boards had their own. The only issue, and then I'm just going to say this, is I don't know that there's, I mean, there are so many stakeholder groups that it is, it might be a budget. So Jess, you and I are talking later today about this anyway, so we can revisit this.
No, I mean, if you guys want to have a separate individual conversation, I'll agendize it like I planned at a meeting that we regularly schedule. We're not talking about it today because we don't have the public draft plan ready.
That's fine. But yes, I would like to have it agendized.
Yeah, so we can do that. I would just preface this, that when it comes to the preservation plan, we just need to make it abundantly clear that we're not giving you guys more opportunity to impact the structure of the plan than any other entity, because that's not the way that the plan is developed. It's not developed for any one entity. It's supposed to be a statewide plan based on public comments of what the public feels is important and what we're getting right and what we're not getting right as a community, not as SHPD, not as the review board, not as the CRC. So
that's fine. I just think we've gotten lost in the shuffle, frankly.
Yeah, so we can definitely present it in this meeting to you all and to the public so that it's another forum to have a public discussion about it and to allow for public feedback. But just so that everybody is clear, this isn't a preservation plan for SHPD, for SHPD's operations. It's not a preservation plan for like HRS 6E or Section 106. It's supposed to look outside of like the existing structures for how we do historic preservation, more of a theoretical kind of exercise about what are we doing, what are we doing that's right, what are we doing that's wrong, what are we missing in what we're doing, and what are the ideas for kind of like for the next 25 years, but for the next like 8 years for how preservation in Hawaii should be focused. So at the end of the day, we should end up with a project that informs all of us who work in this space of like what public input is and taking that information to kind of inform our own actions. So
that's a good summary.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think, you know, it's important to look outside the structure, but I think ultimately the plan kind of becomes something that informs the structure.
Exactly.
And since we're in the structure, that's where I want to make sure that we're dialed into this. Not that we're putting our thumb on a scale of some kind or like, you know, having outsized influence on something. I just think we need to really know it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, you know, be able to understand what's coming into that and how that affects what the board does.
Yeah. No,
and I don't have a good read on that at this point. It would just be helpful to do that within a meeting context. So we can
definitely. And I think, like I said, that was the point of me trying to get it agendized in the next meeting so we would have that discussion in a public sort of forum outside of the focus group meetings that will be scheduled and that was scheduled last fall and that will be scheduled again. So in this next round, again, there should be focus groups, I believe, and then also community groups. So another kind of like thing that I'll beg folks who are listening to this meeting and then even you guys to definitely feel free to come to those focus meetings that are kind of like your areas, but also consider participating in a group outside of your own, like the public meeting, so that you can kind of have the opportunity if you want to like see their perspectives, like the public, anybody outside of your little.
And are all of those meetings on a schedule?
They will be scheduled and publicly. Okay. They all have to be publicly noticed because they're public meetings.
Okay, so if there's a distribution list of some kind for that, I would like to be on it. I just feel like I haven't heard about it, and I haven't religiously stopped the website. I know there is a website, but it would be helpful to get like a pushed notice of some kind.
Yeah. We can do that. And then the last matter of business from SHPD is that we had a new staff person start last month. His name's Josh Newman. He is an archaeologist on Oahu. Chapman Architectural Historian starting next month. We're currently hiring for another architectural historian and an archaeologist five who's supposed to be managing or directing the interagency section of the archaeology branch. And then in the next, hopefully, month, I'm hoping to have a preservation planner position posted, a National and Hawaii Register coordinator position posted, what we're calling a communications and public policy coordinator position, a high-risk manager position, a few more archaeologists, some burial sites, program positions, all posted. I think there's like 12 in total.
Ooh.
So if you know of anyone who is interested or might be interested, please let them know to contact me or to visit the state website. We also have a grants manager position posted right now to manage our So, yeah, if you see Josh or if you work with Josh, say hi. He's cool dude. New architectural historian. Cool person as well. Can't give you the name because they haven't officially started yet, but we'll have their name and name my name will come to you.
That's great.
That is something we've got to take to the BLNR.
Oh, yeah.
It hasn't gone to the BLNR yet. They keep having full agendas where they've been dealing with like releases, but it's my understanding that this grant will be more than just one. So I think this month or last month was scheduled to run now. It was last month. So I'm hoping to get an agenda as soon as I
A little alert about houses in Manoa. My sources tell me the university's thinking of disencumbering itself with College Hill.
Oh.
That would be unfortunate.
Sad, but not surprising.
University doesn't like historic properties by and large.
No. Nope.
Yeah, I kind of gathered that.
When Steve Peter was there, he was sympathetic and he encouraged nominations and things like that. Since then.
Anything else?
So, any further business? I guess lunch calls? So, declare the meeting ended. I don't think we need to vote to end the meeting.
Adjourned.
Meeting adjourned.
Wait, you don't need a second for that.
Second.
Probably get one.
Yeah.
You probably get one.
Thanks.